Part 7. Crunchy Insects. It is a common experience that a problem difficult at night is resolved in the morning after the Committee of Sleep has worked on it. John Steinbeck.
22.
These snakes are incredible, Beth said to Carl.
It was pleasant to have time to relax and just watch without feeling endlessly responsible. She had gotten used to that on the bowl.
If you'd asked me before I saw them, I'd have said more like improbable.
Carl could not take his eyes from the screen. Hard to see how evolution worked out skills like this. They were watching some aft-zone electronic repairs carried out in the narrow spaces near the magnetic drive modules. The snakes wriggled into spaces that would have taken her and Carl hours to unsheathe, disconnect, monitor, diagnose, and fix. Carl called to them.
Go left at the condenser bank. They're cylindrical drums with oil valves on the upper side, colored yellow. Then spin open the double diode. They're the blue plates.
The maintenance artilect took this from Carl's mic and translated it into the sliding vowels and clipped sharp notes that made up the fingersnake language. On the screen, they both watched the snakes make the right moves. They each had a tool harness that they plucked small instruments from. With these, they deftly inserted, turned, levered, and adjusted their way through one task after another, with speeds almost impossible to follow. The interior cameras were tiny light pipes, and gave barely enough definition to make this work. All the while, the ship hummed on, and occasional thumps and surges hampered the work. Sunseeker's magscoop was operating close to its shutdown threshold already, and repairs while operating were the bane of all ships, but it had to be done. Beth was out of her depth here.
Hell, I'm a field biologist.
But Reg said nobody worked alone on ship maintenance, ever. Flight deck officers were full up, conning Sunseeker as close into the bowl's atmosphere levels as they could, while still grabbing enough plasma from the star as they could. Just maintaining flight trajectories while watching for bogeys was burning up all their attention. Beyond tending to the hydroponics, certifying the air content, and helping turn algae into edible insects and porridge, Beth had nothing more to do. She helped a little with the preliminary fault tree analysis of this maintenance run, but that meant mostly giving instructions to the artilect, which plainly knew far more than she did about what she was supposed to be doing, so she used a wise saying she'd learned from Cliff, never pass up a chance to shut up, which was harder to do than she had thought.
Can I help?
She asked for maybe the 18th time.
No, I got it.
Kurt never took his eyes from the screens, and his headphones whispered constantly with updates from the artilect.
Going well.
Man, a few words, bless him. At least Carl didn't ask her over and over about living on the bowl like the rest of the watch crew. The snakes wriggled some more, did scrub procedures on some parts, and with surprising speed got a discharge capacitor line back up to specs, part of the booster system that allowed them to amp their mag scoop when needed.
Okay, Carl said. Come on back out. You guys need a break.
The snakes dutifully turned and started on their tortured way back out of the engine labyrinths.
Amazing what they can do, Carl said, nodding his head. Makes me wonder how we got by without them.
Barely, Beth said.
You're bio. How did smart snakes ever evolve? They sure didn't Earthside.
Something about their home world, one of them said. It had plate tectonics gone wild, crazy surface weather, storms that would take the paint off metal, so smart life stayed underground.
How about earthquakes? Volcanoes?
Their world had bands of furious turmoil, they said. Their language has considerable poetic power. Their landmasses butt against each other, kind of like Earth, with its baseball seam wrapping around the globe. Stay away from those, and life underground is somewhat easier, they learned. Where are you from?
Gross Deutschland. You?
Every place, mostly away from California. After the collapse, we had plenty of migrants from there.
Okay, snakes got smart, but mein Gott, they are wonders at handling mechanics.
Beth grinned. Look, we don't even know why we're relatively hairless compared with the other apes, why we walk on two legs and can outrun anything over distance, why we're so damn good at mathematics, at music, you name it. So understanding where an alien species came from is hopeless.
The fingersnakes came wriggling out of the narrow cap passage into the drive's innards. Ordinarily, she and Carl would have used smart cables to get in there, running them with a control panel. To her astonishment, the snakes broke into a high, wailing song.
Chip, chip, doo! Rang, rang, chip, Dwoo, dwoo. Not entirely unpleasant, either. At least it did not last long. Then they formed a wriggle dance, as Red Wing called it, arcing over each other and forming intricate curves that included bobbing in and out of the circle, rolling over and doubling up to make O's, then back into the throng, still singing, though less shrill. They finally ended up standing halfway erect on their muscular tails, their fingers wriggling at the dumbstruck humans in comradeship, or so whispered the Artelect in Carl's ear. Then, with goodbye hails, they went off to eat in the algae pits, where a repast cooked up by Beth earlier awaited. Carl said, "They're so coordinated, as if it was completely natural for them."
"You mean instead of how humans do it? Drill, train, discipline, drill some more?"
"Pretty much. The snakes, look at them, off to their home in the biospace. All together, chattering. Some species are better at collaboration than we are. How come?"
"We're pretty new at it. About 250,000 years ago, Earthside, group hunting became more successful than individual hunting. That started the logic of shared profits and risks. Penalties kept alpha males from dominating. There emerged a kind of inverted eugenics, elimination of the strong if they abuse power, and the cooperators won out."
"Wow, you know this stuff. It'll be fun seeing you work out all the aliens on the bowl."
Beth opened her mouth to say something modest, but he brought up what she'd already missed. Back on board, but dreaming at nights of the bowl. "Ah, yes. Look, it's time for that self-cook in the mess," she said.
Fred was talking while he pounded a wad of bread dough. Physical work opened him as well as anyone could, so Beth tried to pay attention.
"I kept wondering, you know, the bowl map shows Earth, as of the Jurassic period, when all the biggest dinosaurs emerged. You know, apatosaurs and so forth. I think I finally have the sequence right."
Beth nodded while she did her own kitchen work. He slammed the dough down and punched it for punctuation.
"A variety of intelligent dinosaurs emerged first. Ugh! They must have been carnivores. They invented herding. Ugh! For millions of years, they must have been breeding meat animals for size. Ugh!"
He looked around and realized that nobody was listening except Beth.
"You mean all those theories about dino evolution are wrong?"
This was interesting to her, but apparently not to the others. The crowded kitchen buzzed with low conversation as they worked on aspects of dinner. Fred's jaw closed with a snap. She knew the pattern. If people didn't listen, he didn't talk. Carl handed Beth a handful of roasted crickets that reeked of garlic. "Try these. Crunchy." He had pitched in with the cooking before she even got to the ship's mess.
"Yum," she said.
Next came a basket of aromatic wax worms ready to cook. She tossed aside black ones. That meant necrosis.
"They go bad fast. Hell, I harvested them 2 hours ago," she apologized. "The rest are pupating, just right."
Deftly, she peeled back their cocoons and tossed them into the electric wok. Captain Red Wing came in and watched, standing straight and tall, smacking his lips slightly.
"Wax moth larva, a gourmet favorite."
The crew laughed, because he always pretended to like the food in the mess, no matter how implausible that was, or else he ate alone in his cabin. After their last culinary disaster, a motley mashed-up dish everyone disliked and called stew in hell, he went on dry rations alone. Carl turned and swept brown roasted crickets up, salted them — salt was easy to extract from the recycler — and with head tilted back, trickled them into his mouth.
"How come when you have less to eat, it tastes better?"
"Less is more," Red Wing said.
Everyone around him raised eyebrows.
"Look, we're in a tough spot, carrying forward maneuvers nobody trained for."
He nodded at Carl, Beth, Ayan Ali.
"And exploring a big thing nobody even imagined. We've got to do with less until we see our way out of this."
Everyone nodded.
Red Wing finished with, "So on to glory. And let's eat."
The moth larvae weren't all done. The crew watched the chubby white larva sway and wriggle in delirious fits as the heat took them. Insect protein was simple to raise on algae, and, if well cooked, had a zest that the rest of the menu lacked. Fresh from a skillet, they had a kind of fried fritter some called pond scum patties to go with them. The ship couldn't afford the room or resources to raise muscle and sinew. Some crew came from the North American Republic and weren't used to insect food, or else from experience regarded it as beneath their standards. A few weeks' exposure to the stored rations usually fixed that. Some things, like the trays of gray longworms, few could bear to look at. Those Beth thought it best to grind into a paste for a fake pancake. Beth spread the larva into a frying pan, where they fell into a fragrant, fatty goo Ayan Ali had made. They squirmed as they sizzled, and then went still. She stirred them, thinking, "Amazing what you'll eat when you have to," and then recalled things she had gratefully ingested when she had to on the bowl, sometimes admittedly, while deliberately not looking at them. A zesty aroma rose from the crusty larva, and as soon as she set them out, crew descended on them. Redwing had saved a morsel for this moment, and now trotted out from his personal stock a bowl of honey. That made the dish work. Everyone dug in.
"As insect vomit goes," Carl said, "not at all bad."
Ayan Ali asked Carl, "Done with that flight analysis?"
Carl barely slowed his eating to say,
"Realigned the simulation, yes. Fitted it to isotope data from the scoop over the last century."
Beth asked, "Meaning?"
Ayan Ali said,
"We're still trying to understand why the scoop underperformed. It might help us fly in it now, in this low plasma density regime."
Redwing said casually,
"How's the detector moat net working?"
Beth knew this was one way Redwing liked to turn social occasions into a loose staff report meeting. Certainly his approach made hearing tech stuff flung about a tad more appetizing. Ayan Ali gave herself an extra helping of sauce, much needed, since to Beth the woman seemed rail thin and low energy, and crunched up some more insect delicacies before saying softly to the others,
"Carl and I deployed, on the captain's direction, the diagnostic flyers we'd planned to use when we came into the Glory system. They would give us a good 3D map of the mag fields and solar wind when we came in."
Redwing said,
"So I decided we could send them out on a short leash. They can tell us details about the plasma turbulence, density ridges, things that we can't get a good reading on inside Sunseeker's mag cocoon."
This, too, was a Redwing method. Let the crew know there was logic behind his orders, but do so ex post facto. Playing along, Beth asked,
"Short leash?"
Carl said, "I'm pretty sure we can reel them back in. They're marvels, really, size of a coin, but able to propel themselves by using tiny electric fields that let them sail on magnetic energy to sense plasma and measure waves and report back in gigahertz band. We've got them spread over a big fraction of an astronomical unit, sniffing out ion masses and densities, picking up plasma waves, the whole lot."
Beth was impressed with Sunseeker's abilities and kept quiet while the others kicked around their lingo. They loved their gadgets the way ordinary people cherished their pets. The thousands of smart coins sending back data were working well. That they could be fetched back, told to return home for reuse? Amazing stuff.
Plus they had useful results right now.
Ayan Ali waved one of her augmented fingers, and a 3D vision snapped into view, sharp and clear above their table. Hanging in air, it showed schematics of the bowl in green, with Sunseeker a tiny orange dot swimming above it. The ship had to stay below the rim of the bowl to avoid the defensive weapons there, but it also had to skate above the upper membrane that held in the bowl's atmosphere. That left a narrow disk of vacuum for Sunseeker to navigate, riding the plasma winds that came direct from the star. But more important, they got plasma spurts from the traceries and streamers that purled off the yellow-colored jet. The churning jet was big in the 3D view, a slowly twisting nest of luminous threads that drove forward. As the crew watched the display, it shifted smoothly, since the bridge artilect tracked human eye movements to display what interested people. They witnessed the jet narrowing further as it flowed out, then piercing the bowl cleanly at the back, through the knothole, and out into interstellar space. Deftly, Ayan Ali pointed to the safety zone disk where Sunseeker flew, and the 3D dutifully expanded until they could see bright blue dots swimming in a grid formation all across the huge expanse. They were sprinkled over a distance of about an astronomical unit, and when Ayan Ali waved her hand, they answered with momentary violet flares, a ripple slowly expanding away from the ship's position.
"They report in steadily, each staying a good distance from the others. We get plasma signatures in ample arrays. The coins feed on the plasma itself and change momentum by electrodynamic steering."
She could not restrain herself, beaming.
"Beautiful."
Carl nodded.
"And they got good news, in a way. Remember before we sighted the bowl our scoop underperforming? Turned out it was eating a lot more helium and molecular hydrogen than ordinary interstellar space has. Some of it got ionized by our bow shock and then sucked into the main feeder.
Ah, but it doesn't fuse. Got it,
Fred said. This was the first time he had spoken during the entire meal, and everyone looked at him.
Hard to tell from inside the ship that it wasn't getting the right food.
Beth didn't see, but wasn't afraid to ask. So?
Those useless ions slowed us down, just pointless extra mass, and not fuel.
Fred dipped his head, as if apologizing.
Sorry if I get too technical. My obsessions don't translate well.
Everyone around the table laughed, including Red Wing's rolling bark.
Don't put down your assets, Fred, Red Wing said. Even that dinosaur idea.
Beth appreciated Red Wing's methods, but wanted to move this along, so she asked,
So our drive's okay? We're managing to keep it flying in interplanetary conditions, after all, which it was never designed to do.
That's what the smart coins tell us. We're actually getting more plasma than we would if we were in near-Earth space, Carl said. The jet snarls up some, so we get a bit more blow-off plasma from it.
That star isn't behaving like a main-sequence one, either, Red Wing said. I had the Astra Artelect look into it. It says we got the spectral class wrong at first because of the hotspot. It swamped some spectral lines. But as well, the whole jet formation active zone makes the star act funny.
Ayan Ali asked,
You mean those big solar arches we keep seeing? Big billowing loops. They dance around the hotspot, and every week or two they blow up in huge nasty flares.
Right, Carl said. Those help build the jet somehow. I really don't see how to build so stable a pillar of plasma from the storm at its feet. Those storms give the jet its power and blow off other plasma, too. The jet's base storms also spatter out a big, highly ionized solar wind, which helps us scoop up more fusion fuel, too. Beth nodded, feeling more than a bit out of it.
Pleasant to have some good news for once,
Red Wing said quietly.
So the smart coins tell us we have some room to maneuver. Good indeed.
Smiles all around. Fred nodded enthusiastically.
A new flight deck officer Beth didn't know well, one of the recent revivals, came into the mess.
Captain, we're getting a tight beam laser signal from the bull. Did a translation in digital format. It's in English. Visuals cutting in and out. But we can tell who it is. It's Tanana Reeve.